I'm James Hook, and I am a viticulturalist and winemaker in South Australia.
My name is Catherine Lewis, and I own my own photography business.
I'm John Hamm, and I'm a locksmith.
And I'm Carissa Weiser. Welcome to Career Day. I don't know about you, but chocolate chip cookies are really easy to make, right up until it's time to actually take them out of the oven. My recipe says, bake 10 to 12 minutes or until golden brown. But it's literally different every single time I try to bake. I know what I'm supposed to do, what the paper tells me to do, but waiting for that perfect moment between a mushy dough blob and a crusty charcoal disc is really an art. I just have to know when the moment's right. Today I'm talking with three people from around the world who make their living on knowing when the moment is right. For one, it's making the right decision at the right time. For another, it's capturing that moment. And for the third, it's showing up, physically being somewhere, at just the right time. James Hook is a viticulturist and winemaker in Australia.
I am like a doctor for grapevines.
He consults with other winemakers about their vineyards, grows his own grapes, and makes his own wine.
I look after grapevines to make sure they're healthy. If they get sick, I work out what's wrong with them and how to make them better. And then I take what they make and then turn it into wine.
And in his line of work, timing is everything.
Effectively, grape growing and winemaking, you get one shot at it every year.
Think of it like this.
You know, if you're an artist and you're doing a painting and maybe you spend, you know, a few weeks on it and you decide, hang on, I don't like that. I don't like that technique. I might go and start again. You know, you can probably lose a couple of weeks on something. When you're making wine and growing grapes, you can lose years on it if you don't like the result.
What is it like carrying so much risk? I mean, there's a lot of payoff too, but that, you know, one wrong move and it's like, wow, a couple years.
I've been lucky that I've never done anything personally myself. I did have something go majorly wrong for me though. I'd sent some wine to a bottling hall, which is like the facility that puts wine in bottle. And they had put the wine, which is 1 year of my work, they'd put it in a tank. And another truck had come and they'd accidentally dumped their wine into my wine, thus destroying it as being what it was.
It's a lot of wine and a lot of time. Riding on several individual decisions.
So if you decide to make a change in year one, you may not see the full effects of that for two or three more years. So it is probably one of the most patient games there is. This is an actual lifestyle job because at certain times of year, you might work 7 a.m. to 10 o'clock at night, or when the work happens, you work. So your family is kind of around that as you do it.
Work-life balance is often a hard thing to manage. For James, it's all about being intentional and having support.
I'm very lucky that I have people around me that can sort of sometimes fill in some of my gaps. My wife's very good with finances, whereas I tend to be quite good at promotion and marketing.
Was this something that you always saw yourself doing?
I had a strange path to go into it. It's just an accident of where my family decided to live. They basically picked a wine growing region called McLaren Vale in South Australia.
James' path was largely influenced by circumstance, but he also had a great mentor.
So when I was getting to be about 14 and 15 years old and I wanted pocket money, I'd already been fired from my dad's business. He was a plumber. So yeah, him and I couldn't work together. Me at 14, it just didn't work. But luckily, I had a very, very good agriculture teacher at my high school. He had a vineyard.
That high school teacher had a vineyard, and James worked for him after school just to make some extra money.
Started learning about how you run a vineyard and the things that go into it. And then when I got to be 17, I was thinking, well, I'll go off and become a winemaker.
Add a little being in the right place at the right time, and he was all set.
So there's three or four really good viticulture and winemaking universities in the world. There's UC Davis in California. There's Geisenheim in Germany. There's Montpellier in France. And lo and behold, 40 minutes from where I live, there's Adelaide in South Australia. So again, just another lucky coincidence.
James knows a lot about wine, from growing grapes to making wine to selling wine under his label, Lazy Ballerina, which, by the way, is local only. So I haven't tried it. Yet. What makes a good wine? I see people smelling it, saying it's a good year. What are they talking about?
Generally, what makes it good is it's a taste of the place that it came from. High-quality wine has a definite kind of uniqueness. It reflects where the grapes were grown. A smell that you have in the vineyard will actually come through later in the wine. It's a smell that's natural to that place. It's quite an interesting experience because sometimes you can taste a wine, you know, 2-3 years later and you get the flashback memory of being there when it was picked or when it was growing. Because memory and taste and smell are actually very closely linked to each other neurologically. With the right type of wine, you can actually kind of get the same kind of sensory experience. You can remember, oh yeah, that's sight, and I remember how that smelt on that day I was there. Yeah.
So remember, wine is made from grapes, and it's about the grapes.
So when you see a vintage mark, so a year, that is the date that the grapes were picked. So it goes with the year that the fruit was grown, regardless of how long they took to bottle it or how old the vineyard was.
Essentially, there are decisions being made all the time, some made quickly and some executed at the right time. Making the right decisions is an art, and that art translates to success. And for a business, that success is everything.
The main interesting thing about grapevines is the difference in what the value of the end product can be. You can make a huge difference to fruit by the way you look after it. If you look after it rightly, you can start making, you know, some very premium product out of it.
What kinds of decisions are we talking about here?
The first job you have a year is you prune the vine. So you decide how many buds to leave on it. Then in spring, that vine begins to throw shoots and you decide how to look after those shoots, whether you feed them or you don't feed them. Almost physically pluck the vine and sculpt it and make sure that there's not too many shoots on it, or if you just leave it to grow naturally. Then in summer, it's a question of, you know, do you water it? Do you not water it? When do you pick?
So as a winemaker, James has to make a bunch of decisions throughout the year that either make or break the end product. Someone else who depends on action at the perfect moment is Catherine Lewis.
If you have a kid sitting on either mom or dad's lap, you ask them, do you see mom or dad? Do they have any boogers?
She's the owner and lead photographer of Catherine Lewis Photography. Her job is to capture moments, which is easier said than done.
And then the little kid will look up at their parents and the parent will be surprised and smile down at the child. And it's perfect.
Wow. What gave you the courage to say, okay, I'm going to do this full time on my own?
That's really funny. Because I don't know that I've ever been fully comfortable running my own business. I love it, but it's very uncomfortable. The idea was really born after multiple pina coladas in Hawaii with my mom on vacation. And since I've had multiple other careers up until this point, I kept knowing that I was unhappy, but not really knowing where I should be. My dad's also a small business owner. My parents run the business together. And so did my grandparents and lots of aunts and uncles. And they had all told me, no, get a real job, have insurance, have a pension, all that good stuff. But then I just knew that wasn't right for me. And multiple.
So she asked her mom over a drink. Do you think I could really do this? And her mom said, yeah.
And so I came home from vacation and started a website and started seeing if people would pay me to take pictures of them.
And that meant she had to quit her current job. Putting in your 2-week notice is not always the most comfortable thing. Catherine said the morning of, she was sick to her stomach. She couldn't eat anything. It was time, right before the holidays, and she was going to put in her notice, then have a couple weeks off before starting her photography business full time. Well, she gets to work, and her boss isn't there.
And I had an email that she was incredibly sick. Not only was she not in the office, she couldn't even take phone calls today.
Oh, of course.
So I could not put in my notice.
Oh, no. And what did that feel like?
I sat there that entire Monday like, oh my goodness, what am I doing? Is this a sign? Should I not be putting in my notice? Like, what was I thinking? Should I really rethink my entire choices? And so I don't think I got any work done that day. I was just in turmoil.
So Catherine goes home, but she can't sleep that night. She's a total wreck. The next day, she's just hoping that it goes better.
It's Tuesday morning. I'm just hoping she's going to be in the office so that we can talk about it. And nope, not in the office today, but if you have anything you need to email me about, feel free to email me. So at like 8:05, I'm like, I would love to chat with you today. And so then she emails me back, okay, let's hop on the phone right now. I don't know what's up, but let's hop on the phone. And so she calls me right then, and I tell her, I just kind of blurted it out. I need to talk to you because it's time for me to move on, and I need to move on and fulfill my dreams and do my own thing. She was like, wow, no wonder you emailed me so early.
And once you've told your boss that you're leaving, it's hard to take that back. Catherine had been through an uncomfortable exit before, and she felt prepared for however her boss might react here. But she was not.
But then she was just really nice and really congratulatory, and it was incredible leaving to do your own thing. Everybody was so supportive. I've never had more people tell me that they were proud of me, which I did not expect. And just the feeling and warmth and love that came with it was so incredible. Because people want to see you succeed and they want to see you do your own thing. And I didn't think I would get that from coworkers, especially ones that I was leaving and leaving high and dry in my role. But everyone loved that I was going off to do my own thing. And so it was actually a really wonderful experience.
That's not to say it's an easy route. It's still work to do your own thing professionally. Being an independent photographer means being both an artist and a business person.
Where did you find those early clients?
A lot of them were people that I knew. One of my best friends was like, okay, who do I know that would need pictures? And she texted like five people. And one of them said, oh, sure, like, why not? And so we met at the beach a few days later and I took their engagement pictures. And then there's another friend whose friend was having a baby. And she was like, oh, would you do it really cheap? Like, let's just see how it goes. And now I've had that client my entire business and have gotten to see that little girl grow. And it's so fun.
I love hearing that someone really enjoys their job, that it's fun. Because not everyone can say that. But did you catch that comment about price? About doing photos for a cheaper rate? Setting prices is one thing. Getting people to actually pay full price early on is another. But it factors into taking a fun hobby and turning it into a fun, profitable business.
I definitely cut my friends a deal. Some of those early clients are actually grandfathered into ridiculous pricing, but I love them and I've been able to keep them. And I think
for Catherine, early clients came from networks she already knew, like friends. She said that she read tons of blogs, learned as much as possible, and ultimately decided to raise her prices early in the game.
Increase. And everything I posted higher prices than maybe I knew that I was charging. But then I started to get clients that didn't know me personally. And that was when I really was able to charge what I wanted because they just see me as a photographer.
And that's when you know you've made it as a photographer.
I think a lot of entrepreneurs drive themselves into the ground, but I felt like I was doing that working for other people.
That you found the right fit in running your own business.
I'm also a big believer in working out. I do a lot of yoga, I run a lot, I go to the gym a lot. And so when it gets hard, endorphins make it all better.
For Catherine, taking care of herself outside of work allows her to be an entrepreneur.
And so now that I've been working for myself for a while, it's really been a focus on taking time every day to work out, to cook the meals I want to eat. And I really believe in sustaining yourself so that you can do what you want to do long term.
So we met James, the winemaker, who has to make decisions and act at the right moment. Catherine, the photographer, had to decide the right moment to quit her job, start her own business, and now makes a living capturing moments in other people's lives. Someone else from a long line of entrepreneurs that has to be there for people at the right moment is fourth-generation locksmith John Hamm.
My great-grandfather started the business.
Did you grow up thinking you would join the business?
No. This happened right after I went to college. The economy went to crap. So I stopped going to school and learned a trade.
That trade was being a locksmith. And being a locksmith boils down to this.
I basically keep bad people from getting into good people's houses.
He also helps a lot of good people get back into their own spaces.
And it's usually they've either lost their keys or their kid's locked in their car and they don't know what to do. So we go out and solve the problem.
Has anyone ever told you that you're their hero?
Oh, yeah. You get somebody's kid out of the back seat, you're definitely their hero. Well, one of the guys I work with, he carries little stuffed animals with him, and he gives it to the kid. Yeah, feels good.
Essentially, John is a real-life Superman. He arrives at just the right moment, his schedule is often on call, and he has to solve problems while being held accountable. And in his home state, locksmith accountability is called licensure.
Only certain states require licensing. Yeah, you could be just, you know, a handyman and declare you're a locksmith in some states, which Alabama, you have to be licensed.
And that means
you have to go take a test through the AESBL,
which is the Alabama Electronic Security Board of Licensure.
And when you do, you have 12 hours a year you have to put into education.
So you're in your seventh year as a locksmith and you're licensed. What's something that you might tell a friend about keeping their house safe?
The best advice I can give you is to make your house look harder to break into than your neighbor.
In other words, when it comes to home security, it really is about keeping up with the Joneses. Some of the easy basics?
Simply, you could get a fake alarm sign and put it in your front yard. I mean, you can buy one online for like 10 bucks. But you can trim back your hedges and make sure you got plenty of lighting.
Or to just make your life simpler, call a locksmith. What's the biggest challenge for you at work?
Personally, the time management. You know, deciding how I'm going to spend my time. So I've got a daughter and my wife. You know, I've got to be there for them at the same time. I got to juggle being available for everybody else too.
That's a big challenge.
It is a challenge. You can't make a schedule. There's no schedule. We get a call, we go.
Do you think it's possible to have a family and an on-call job like that then?
Yeah, you can. You have to be conscious about it all the time. It seems to me like a huge effort. Maybe that's just me, but I have to make a conscious effort.
It was so refreshing to hear someone talk about being intentional about family time. It's something John doesn't regret. It's why he can be an involved father, husband, work the schedule of a locksmith, and enjoy what he does. So there you have it. Three people whose careers depend on action at a moment's notice. Whether making big decisions, changing careers, or being there for someone else, we saw how a few people are making it work while still enjoying their job and finding time for themselves and family.
Never overpromise. Yeah. Get a job, figure it out, travel when you can, and it'll come to you, or you'll come to it.
I just really ground myself in that I can't possibly know everything now, and that's okay. I haven't been that concerned about going that fast, but rather learning and being okay with the journey.
There is a lot of pressure put on to people when they're 16 to make a decision about where they're going to go. Don't worry about that. Maybe you have to be a little bit older to know what you want to do.
Special thanks to James Hook, Catherine Lewis, and John Hamm for sharing their stories with the world. If you'd like to be considered for the show, head on over to careerdayshow.com or say hi to me, at Carissa Weiser, on Twitter. If you have time, a review on iTunes is extremely helpful. To find the show on iTunes or the iOS podcast app, go to itunes.careerdayshow.com. As a quick disclaimer, outside of any possible ads which would be clearly marked, the podcast does not receive compensation from any companies, brands, or people mentioned or interviewed on the show. As always, thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time on Career Day.
I cook a little bit, yeah. Grill master, yeah.
What's your go-to?
Oh, my go-to is steak, chicken, asparagus, and grilled corn. Yeah. Lemon pepper chicken, that's where it's at. Cook it low and slow. That's right.